Radio Free Readout begins in 5, 4, 3, 2.
Welcome to the Voice of the American Redoubt. This is episode 18-40. Happy Armistice Day, also known as Veterans Day in the United States. I hope that those of you who served had a blessed weekend. I salute you. Thank you guys for your service. I'm a veteran myself. And this we talked about yesterday, threw out a lot of resources for folks to take advantage of some of the opportunities where businesses are offering discounted or even free services and products for those of you who serve. So anyway, it is also Armistice Day, the end of World War One. I'm going to talk about that here in just a few moments. But let's see, where do we want to start? I want to, I guess, start by reminding you that if you have limited bandwidth, remember you can call in our Sunday evening podcast live stream, or anytime we're doing a special event live stream, there is a number to call into our Stream Monster account and listen to the live stream. And that number is 857-757-1085. That's a different number than the Saturday morning show, because this one is Stream Monsters directly coming at you from Radio Free Redoubt. But the Saturday morning stream is actually coming from the American Christian Network affiliate out of Spokane on Liberty Broadcasting Systems. So that's a different number. But anyway, you can, any way you'd like to listen, or other ways that you would like to listen, you can just go to radiofreeredoubt.com, click on Listen to RFR. That tab will open up a page that will show you all the different ways you can listen, including our archive shows. All right, let's get into the news and commentary brought to you by the author Glenn Tate and the 299 Days book series, with all 10 books out on audio as well. 299days.com to learn more about that. All right, I'm going to get into this. This is kind of a top news story. It just really jumped out at me this morning when my my news alerts went off. The Prime Minister of France, Macron, rips nationalism and targets Trump. Well, I've got my own few thoughts on that, some things I want to share with you guys. So I'm going to save that for probably, segment four. This is our Armistice Day podcast. So, I want to stick to that Armistice Day. In the news, from AP News, out of the wildfires are just ripping California state apart. There's one article here. I guess I didn't realize it till this afternoon. I guess Paradise has, it's near Chico. It's just pretty much annihilated. As relatives desperately search shelters for missing loved ones, crews stepped up the search for bodies in the smoking ruins. So far, there's like 27 known deaths from the wildfires that are just ripping through Southern California, Malibu Beach area, and then up in the northern part around Paradise, California. But the statewide death toll stood at 25. Actually, I think that's been bumped up to 27 now. Appeared certain to rise. More than 100 people were reported missing after the so-called Camp Fire ravaged a swath of Northern California. At least five search teams were working in Paradise, a town of 27,000 that was largely incinerated on Thursday, and in surrounding communities. Authorities called in a mobile DNA lab and anthropologists to help identify victims. So by early afternoon, one of the two black hearses stationed in Paradise had picked up another set of remains, according to this article. So very dangerous. We are not in a situation where we can really help out with communications. I have not heard from any of our Amron operators in those areas. I know that we have some that are somewhat close to those areas. But any other disaster, we want to coordinate with those in the local areas. I haven't heard from any of the Amron operators in those areas. But also, we're not seeing wide swaths of towns isolated by wildfires like we saw in Western Washington, where we deployed there to provide emergency communications. Because you have, steep and deep mountainous ravines that were, fire was traveling very quickly and it was cutting off towns. So we made ourselves available on the air as a lifeline for those who may be trapped in areas that are cut off by wildfires. Here they are, they're blocking access from anybody that's not from there. So you can't even get into the area in most of these cases. And, they're trying to evacuate these people out of the area. Much different situation. Plus, they have just a ton of resources in the area and around. So we're ready to serve, but we have not heard anything yet so far. And so far, it doesn't appear that conventional communications have been disrupted to the point where they need unconventional communications brought in. So we'll continue to monitor. We've got about 300,000 people statewide were under evacuation orders. Most of those are in Southern California. Okay, let's move on here to, there's one news now. This one kind of made me chuckle a little bit. A church sign deters Christians from voting for Democrats and their polling license gets revoked. Finally, you've got a brave pastor. There aren't very many of them that are willing to take a stand. Well, this guy really goes the extra mile. A county elections official revoked a Florida church's polling license to hold future elections at its location over a sign its pastor posted on the property meant to dissuade Christians from voting for Democrats. This is a Pasco County, apparently. Their supervisor of elections withdrew the status of Grace Church, saying that their sign deters Christians from voting for Democrats. Well, God bless them. What is this? Where did it say? Oh, beware of hypocrisy before God. So the Grace of God Church pastor, Al Carlisle, whose church is located in Newport Richey, Florida, posted a sign on his church's property warning Christians on election day about acting hypocritically by voting for ungodly Democrats who support unbiblical principles on Tuesday, only to show up at church the following week praising God. He says, don't vote for Democrats on Tuesday and sing, oh, how I love Jesus on Sunday. That's what the sign read. So, yeah, good for you. But, oh, no more voting. No more voting there. Taking your voting polling location privileges away. Can't be telling Christians not to vote for godlessness. That's just un-American. Wow. Okay, from the we live in a new world of demonically inspired behavior, so go armed everywhere category of the news. This is a really, really sad story. Another one, 12 killed at a California country and western bar where people were celebrating and dancing. 12 killed, including the gunman who apparently committed suicide. From what we're getting so far, this was a former Marine dealing with PTSD, demons. About 23-20 hours local time there, he opens fire with a Glock 21, 45 auto. Apparently 200 people were reportedly inside the Borderline Bar and Grill, which was hosting a university student night. And this guy, apparently the shooter was a regular there. So we're still trying to get more information. I'm so skeptical of information that comes out on these. And there was even some social media flying around. This guy had converted to Islam and this was an Islamic attack, but I'm not seeing any evidence to support that. It looks like a PTSD case, but we start learning about medications that the person was on, all kinds of other questions that that beg answers that we don't get, you know, from Las Vegas all the way to, you know, to this most recent one. So remember to lift these people up in your prayers. But there was an article that came out by the BBC ran an article, and I'm looking down further into this. They decided to throw in gun violence, the Gun Violence Archive website, which statistics, which state that more than 12,000 people have been killed by firearms in the U.S. so far this year. 12,000 people have been killed by firearms in the U.S. so far this year, including about 3,000 people under 18. And it says this number does not include an annual estimate of 22,000 suicides via a sidearm. Of course, there's 22,000 estimates. I don't know what they base that estimate on, but whenever they say an estimate, there's, you know, lots of room for fudging numbers. But when they say that doesn't include the suicides, I would say it also does not include the mutual gang violence. It doesn't include the justifiable police shootings. I mean, they're not accounting for those. They're not telling you how many of those were justifiable shootings by police, or the hundreds of self-defense cases where someone had to use lethal force in defense of their life or the life of another one, another person. They're not telling you that some of these are from accidents. It's not gun violence necessary. There's accidents also account for a lot of those 12,000 people who've been killed by firearms this year. Just like people have accidents with cars or ladders or four-wheelers, etc., etc., accidents from firearms. I knew I could spit it out. But there's a California legislator who says we need to explore more ways of reducing these senseless killings. We need to explore ways. We need to look at all the different ways. What are different options out here? Of course, translation is we need to put all our heads together to figure out a way to reduce these senseless killings that does not include Christ or the Bible or any concepts like returning to our national Christian moral foundations. But besides that, guys, let's really put our heads together and figure out how we can stop these senseless killings. But at the same time, while this California legislator is quoting numbers and statistics and how many people are killed by firearms and what we must be able to do to try to reduce these, he belongs to a party that is largely responsible for spearheading the murdering of our unborn children. So while this anti-gun statistic shows that we've got 12,000 people who have been killed this year by firearms, they didn't mention that 800,000 of our nation's children have been killed by abortion this year. They don't talk about that. And of course, speaking of that, we've got this, the Wall Street Journal just ran this article this week where the Democrats say they're going to pass the most aggressive gun control legislation in decades now when they become the House majority in January. Plans they renewed this week in the aftermath of a mass killing in the California bar. Their efforts will be spurred by an incoming class of pro-gun control lawmakers who scored big in Tuesday's midterm elections, although any measures would likely meet stiff resistance in the GOP-controlled Senate. Of course, and we're counting on that. And stiff resistance with our president as well. Now, before we take a break, we'll take you to the stark raving mad page of the rhinopack.org website. The rhino hunters in, I think, in North Idaho, that's what the I-N-O, Rhino Pack. It's a political action committee exposing those who call themselves Republicans but are actually towing the leftist line. They're exposing them. Well, they also have this stark raving mad page that I'd love to read. It's their take on some of these news articles. I pulled out a couple here, one about the fires and another one about Soros. So, 11 November, just today, out of California. In another refreshing example of politically incorrect truth, President Trump has blamed California's catastrophic fires on the state's renowned environmental wackoism. This system of systematic stupid largely bans loggers from forests. The result is the build of dead trees and undergrowth, which creates conditions wherein normal forest fires explode into catastrophic infernos. President Trump went on to say that perhaps it was time the rest of the states stopped picking up the tab for the self-induced devastation. No doubt political pundits will immediately label the president racist for insensitivity toward the trees. We recognize that statement makes no sense. Nothing liberals do makes sense. And the other one from Stark Raving Mad, Soros spends $500 million for migrants. In a virtual tsunami of spending, mega donor and far left plutocrat George Soros has boasted of dumping $500 million into support for the third world invasion of Western democracies. As is his practice, Soros has not given the money to any single group or organization lest they be identified and targeted by the imperiled governments. Rather, he has distributed the funds through a spiderweb of connected and interconnected, I would add, organizations, each with the same goal, but utilizing different tactics and serving different so-called quote-unquote clients. Some South American, some Syrian, some North African. No one knows why the former Hungarian Nazi collaborator despises Western culture and civilization, but no one since Saladin, the 11th century Muslim warlord, has done so much to destroy it. And that's it. Now, I want to thank the listener who sent this in one more time. Happy Veterans Day and happy Armistice Day. This is I want to just salute those of you who have served. But as I mentioned, this is Armistice Day. This was sent in, this audio file I'm going to play for you here in just a second, is the sound of the end of the war. And this is from historicalfirearms.info. We'll include the link in the highlights and resources posting. But a new exhibition at the Imperial War Museum uses some of the seismic data collected during the war to recreate the moment the armistice, which ended the Great War, came into effect. Sound ranging was used to try and gauge the direction and distance of enemy artillery fire. This piece of recording tape came from the American sector near the River Moselle. Using six microphones, it captured the last moments of the war as the artillery slowly ceased fire at 11 a.m. on November 11th, 1918. We'll be back in a moment.
The midterm elections of 2018 are now over. There's much to be celebrated, seeing the leftists didn't achieve their so-called blue wave that they were boasting of. President Trump lost fewer House seats than nearly every other president in the past 80 years. Those of us who love our American heritage and conservative values saw many victories in key races. Unfortunately, however, once again in Washington state, just a few counties on the west side obliterated the unified vote of Eastern Washington. The passing of I-1639 was a travesty for those of us who cherish the right to self-defense. Now, because the masses of lemmings in the urbanized portions of Washington state want you and me disarmed, it will soon be illegal for young, responsible, 18 to 20-year-old adults to be able to choose certain types of firearms for their self-defense. You will now face felony charges if a criminal commits a crime using a firearm stolen from your home. And among other things, you will no longer have privacy when it comes to your medical records. The passage of 1639 will do nothing to truly reduce crime. What it has done is further ensure that citizens in Eastern Washington become criminals virtually overnight. You know, and most importantly, they know, that certain firearms in the hands of free men act as one of the greatest obstacles to tyranny. This was the whole purpose for I-1639. It's not about removing your ability to fight crime. It's about removing your ability to resist tyranny. So my question for you is this. Have you had enough yet? They won't stop, and their efforts to disarm you aren't temporary. They will continue until your rights are stripped, your property belongs to them, you and your ability to stop them are removed. I ask again, have you had enough? If you have, then hopefully you've come to the realization that if you want to preserve your freedom, the rule of law, and your property, there is only one solution, Liberty State. The sooner you come to this realization and the sooner you begin joining the rest of us in the effort, the sooner it will become a reality. Join the solution today. Decide to volunteer or donate to the Liberty State effort and make a difference that counts. The sooner we all focus on this solution, the sooner we will be able to get it accomplished. I'm Lady Liberty, and this is a public service announcement on behalf of Liberty State. Visit us at libertystate.org today.
Welcome back to segment two at the Voice of the American Redoubt. Segment two is brought to you by our friends at Selkirk Mountain Real Estate, helping patriots like you get strategically relocated to the northernmost part of the panhandle of Idaho. If that's where you've got your sights set, then check them out today. Go to selkirkmountainrealestate.com. Also, don't forget to check out socialismtoday.info for more information and proof about the spread of socialism in our country, brought to you by the senior editor of Gem State Patriot. And so now I want to get into the American Redoubt segment. There's something I want to share with you guys from the also from Redoubt News here in just a little bit, because just this Thursday was Kristallnacht, and I'm going to talk a little bit about that. That was we celebrated that, or not celebrated, but remembered that this week. But I got several emails, and I want to address this and then walk away from it, leave it behind. So if anybody else asks about this, I'm going to direct them to segment two of episode 18-40, and that has to do with the smear campaign by the left with the help of the local media, fake news, in and around the Spokane area, which just went viral. It went around the world. This legislator, Matt Shea, calling for the killing of all males who don't comply with you. And just, there we go. The Liberty State's going to be headed by this guy who's trying to set up a theocracy, and he's going to kill everybody who doesn't agree with him. That's just horrible. We possibly couldn't possibly support something like this, and so on. Well, the whole thing was bunk. But anyway, I understand people say, okay, I believe it's a smear campaign. Not surprised at all, but how do I respond? You know, what do I say when people bring this up? That's a valid point. So, we've talked about this in the last couple of shows, the podcast. I've been on Patriot Radio with Matt Shea, and I've talked about it myself, and we've talked about this, you know, in speaking engagements and so on. Okay. So what this was, let me just read to you how I've responded to a couple of the listeners who have asked about this. Okay. Because the headlines are, you know, Representative Shea is spreading this just war doctrine, and he's calling for killing of all males, which is obviously, well, it's not the case. He doesn't think like that at all. So let me just read to you my response. The just war doctrine or theory is centuries old and it outlines the justification for war. It's from a Christian perspective, including when it's permissible for Christians to go to war, as well as the limitations and the parameters once war is justified. Now, the premise of that warfare must be a last resort, and very specific considerations must be made when weighing the justifications for war. Now, there's several online resources. Actually, Wikipedia has a pretty decent overview of it. I'll include that link here, but you can just type in just war theory, or also a just war doctrine. But diplomatic resolution is always preferable under just war theory, even for the more powerful party, even before a war started. Examples of just war are in self-defense, as long as there is a reasonable possibility of success, preventive war against a tyrant who is about to attack, and war to punish a guilty enemy. A war is not legitimate or illegitimate simply based on its original motivation. It must comply with a series of additional requirements. It is necessary that the response be commensurate with the evil. The use of more violence that is strictly necessary would constitute an unjust war. Governing authorities declare war, but their decision is not sufficient cause to begin a war. If the people oppose a war, then it is illegitimate. The people have a right to depose a government that is waging or is about to wage an unjust war. Once war has begun, there remain moral limits to action. For example, one may not attack innocents or kill hostages. It is obligatory to take advantage of all options for dialogue and negotiations before undertaking a war. War is only legitimate as a last resort. Listen to this part. Under this doctrine, expansionist wars, wars of pillage, wars to convert infidels or pagans, and wars for glory are all inherently unjust. And there's a couple of other links that I will also include here. However, what the anti-Christians and the media are freaking out about is a document containing someone's sermon notes that was on this thumb drive, contrasting just war theory with the theory of the history of Old Testament warfare. Specifically, they're agitated over what the media is calling Shay's manifesto for Christians, calling for the killing of all males who disagree with us. It is not a manifesto. That's just a label, which was the result of the media's own literary creativity, aka lies. Specifically, what they're pointing toward was from a history lesson on warfare from Deuteronomy 20, 10 through 13. And I'll read it to you right now. This is from my New King James Version. When you go near a city to fight against it, remember, this is old war. It was a discussion of the contrast between the more modern just war theory, Christians who are trying to determine whether or not it's justifiable to go to war, in contrast with how they did it in the Old Testament, right? So this is one example of how they did it in the Old Testament. When you go near a city to fight against it, then proclaim an offer of peace to it. And it shall be that if they accept your offer of peace and open up to you, then all the peoples who are found in it shall be placed under tribute to you and serve you. Now, if the city will not make peace with you, but war against you, then you shall besiege it. And when the Lord your God delivers it into your hands, you shall strike every male in it with the edge of the sword. Now, I was at the meeting when this thumb drive was passed out, and I received a copy of it, which, among many other things, also had a folder in it on the ethics in warfare and war history. It had little stories about battles. Now, we're talking about someone who was a former officer and a combat veteran in two different theaters. Do you not think it would be reasonable that a officer in the United States military leading men in combat zones should have a pretty good fundamental understanding of the principles and the history of warfare? That's exactly what he had, and he shared it with others, Christians who were looking at our country and the way it's deteriorating and were saying, do you think there could be a war in this country? Well, that's a good question. Here's some guidance and some things on the history of warfare, including biblical warfare and just war doctrine, so that people don't go off unhinged proposing things that are unlawful or unbiblical or against how we should be acting as Christians. Completely fair. But see, this was completely unfair, the portrayal of this whole document and the context, which I've talked about that already, was deceptively portrayed. So carrying out combat operations or killing people who don't think like us as being, while it was deceptively portrayed, was never even inferred in any meeting, much less discussed. I've known Matt Shea personally for approximately 6 years and consider him a close friend. We have shared our thoughts and our feelings on many issues, while on road trips, around campfires, patriot events, speaking engagements, on the air, off the air, in private. I have never heard him say anything remotely close to or espousing any ideology of killing those who think differently than us. He does fully understand the indicators of civil war, internal conflict within a country, and he's concerned about the anti-Christian and anti-constitution, anti-patriot rhetoric being flung around by hard leftists who espouse Marxism inside and outside of our government. So like many of us, he understands that these historical indicators behoove us to sit up and take note and understand the reality that war could be a reality in our country one day in the future. None of us wants it. But sometimes it's forced upon a people whether they want it or not. That's a sobering reality that he's openly said that we as Christian patriots have to come to terms with. Now, I do recall the meeting and conversations were mostly about prepping and logistics in the event of a major disaster. That's what the discussion was centered around. Strategic food reserves and lists of food storage, such as how many pounds of wheat should a family of four have to store up in order to sustain them for a minimum of 1 year, for example. Someone pulled that one Old Testament document from everything, sent it to a pagan, openly self-declared pagan, who has a social media site, supposedly alarmed that Matt is planning this Christian holy war, including killing of homosexuals and all males who disagree with him, with us. Absolutely insane watching all this unfold, including the death threats coming in aimed at him, his family, his friends, and basically anyone who supports him. On top of that, the sheriff in Spokane County, who hates Matt, says he referred this document to the FBI Counterterrorism Task Force, further stating that Matt Shea and others in attendance and in his circle are under federal investigation. I'd laugh if it wasn't so serious. But a little follow-up to that. The FBI was contacted. FBI has confirmed there is no investigation. There's no grounds for an investigation. These were clearly notes of some sort, sermon notes, whatever. There's nothing to warrant an investigation. But the Spokesman Review buried that sentence in some other article that they were running. That's my response in a nutshell. And I can tell you from the inside. So anyway, this was a smear campaign against a good, godly man. And as I said before, the local media who aided in that should be ashamed of themselves. They said, oh, we've tried to contact him many times. And I talked to Matt. He goes, huh, they have not called me once. So that's what you can expect. All right, we'll be back. Segment 3 coming right up. Don't go away. This is the voice of the American Redoubt. Are you prepared for an economic, socio-political collapse in America? Do you wonder how something like that could be possible? What would that even look like? I recommend Glenn Tate's 10-book series titled 299 Days. From a lawyer and government insider's perspective, he lays out a plausible scenario that could very well come about if we continue on the path we're on as a country. Through his fictional character, he lays out his own real-life journey to prepare himself and his family for the possibility of a future full of difficult challenges and what seem like impossible choices. 299 Days is a high-action dystopian novel written from the perspective of the average Joe American and outlines realistic plans and action steps that you could implement to prepare yourself and those around you for the difficult possibilities ahead. Go to 299days.com to learn more. This is segment 3, brought to you by Strategic Landscape Design. Designs to help keep you safe and to help you thrive on your property if you want to get the most out of it, to integrate water access, gaining legal water rights, developing your property as a food supply with energy production in mind, security features built in. All of that stuff is really critical, and Strategic Landscape Design actually helps you with that. Another service that they offer is if you are looking for property to buy and haven't even bought it yet, but you want some expert advice to help you make the right decision with all of those things that I just mentioned in mind, give them a call. StrategicLandscapeDesign.com. All right. Now, this is from RedoubtNews.com and from November 9th, this week. In 1938, Nazis launch Kristallnacht. Over 100,000 Jews fled Germany for other countries after Kristallnacht in 1938. On that day, November 9th, in 1938, in an event that would foreshadow the Holocaust, German Nazis launch a campaign of terror against Jewish people and their homes and businesses in Germany and Austria. The violence, which continued through November 10th and was later dubbed Kristallnacht, or Night of Broken Glass, after the countless smashed windows of Jewish-owned establishments, left approximately 100 Jews dead, 7,500 Jewish businesses damaged, and hundreds of synagogues, homes, schools, and graveyards vandalized. An estimated 30,000 Jewish men were arrested, many of whom were then sent to concentration camps for several months. They were released when they promised to leave Germany. Kristallnacht represented a dramatic escalation in the campaign started by Adolf Hitler in 1933, when he became chancellor to purge Germany of its Jewish population, what he called the Final Solution, a term that we've heard often referred to in modern-day America when discussing the problem with Christians. The Nazis used the murder of a low-level German diplomat in Paris by a 17-year-old Polish Jew as an excuse to carry out the Kristallnacht attacks. On November 7th, 1938, Ernst von Rath was shot outside the German embassy by Herschel Grinspan, who wanted revenge for his parents' sudden deportation from Germany to Poland, along with tens of thousands of other Polish Jews. Following von Rath's death, Nazi propaganda minister Joseph Goebbels ordered German stormtroopers to carry out violent riots disguised as spontaneous demonstrations. Their own little Antifa types against Jewish citizens. And of course, they also used the brown shirts too. I don't know if you guys remember this. These street thugs to start these riots to get things all spun up, agitated. Local police and fire departments were told not to interfere. Sound familiar? Remember when Antifa is tearing up the town in Portland and the Portland leftist mayor says to the police, stand down, right? When Trump supporters were being attacked by thugs. So, let me read that again. Local police and fire departments were told not to interfere. In the face of all the devastation, some Jews, including entire families, committed suicide. Can you imagine? In the aftermath of Kristallnacht, the Nazis blamed the Jews and fined them 1 billion marks, or $400 million, in 1938 dollars. For von Rath's death, As repayment, the government seized Jewish property and kept insurance money owed to Jewish people. In its quest to create a master Aryan race, the Nazi government enacted further discriminatory policies that essentially excluded Jews from all aspects of public life. Over 100,000 Jews fled Germany for other countries after Kristallnacht. The international community was outraged by the violent events of November 9th and 10th. Some countries broke off diplomatic relations in protest, but the Nazis suffered no serious consequences, leading them to believe they could get away with the mass murder that was the Holocaust, in which an estimated 6 million European Jews died. And I'm reading modern headlines. I go through here. Antifa extremists attack peaceful Trump supporters. Maxine Waters gets her wish. Antifa mob attacks Charlie Kirk. Soros-funded Antifa plans attack on Christian pro-life event. These are the headlines today. This, like in the last 18 months, these have been our headlines. Liberal Antifa terrorists threaten children on Twitter, telling them there's no place you can go. We'll catch you another time, Cass. This isn't the last you've heard or seen of us, honey. This is what Antifa is writing to children. Antifa terrorist attacks conservative prayer group. The left-wing Antifa domestic terrorists showed up to harass and then do battle with a Christian conservative organization called Patriot Prayer, which had obtained a permit legally from the city to hold demonstrations and a march. And if you guys remember, once they were attacked, the mayor tells the police to not intervene. Sound familiar? So even today, just as recent as this week, Antifa website calls for violence against Trump supporters. And what do we have here? An Antifa mob descending on Tucker Carlson's home. A news pundit threatening, "You are not safe." Washington, D.C., November 8th. Interesting. The day before Kristallnacht. A left-wing organization with a history of violent threats gather outside Fox News host and Daily Caller co-founder Tucker Carlson's home Wednesday night with a self-admitted mission of instilling fear into his family, saying smash racism DC and Antifa affiliate group that previously confronted Senator Ted Cruz and his wife in a restaurant and threatened that Republicans, quote unquote, are not safe. Posted videos on social media of their gathering outside a conservative commentator's Washington, D.C. home, Fox reports. And this is what they're saying. "Each night you remind us that we are not safe. Tonight we remind you that you are not safe either," the group claimed in the since deleted posts, which have been screen captured. It also posted his home address, as well as, that's called doxing, by the way, as well as the addresses of his brother and Neil Patel, with whom Carlson co-founded the Daily Caller. A mob has gathered outside Tucker Carlson's home, demanding his family leave D.C. because he's a racist scumbag. And this is what they said. "Every night you spread fear into homes, we remind you that you're not safe either." Now, Tucker has four children. "Tucker Carlson, we will fight. We know where you sleep at night," the mob chanted. "Racist scumbag, leave town." The group also chanted, "No borders, no walls, no USA at all." These are communist revolutionaries being allowed to roam our streets. They also tweeted that Carlson cannot hide from the people you hurt with your rhetoric, your lies, and your hate. And who are the hateful ones? How many right-wing conservatives do we see doxing the leftists, threatening to harm them, telling them they're safe nowhere, instilling fear for political reasons, to influence somebody's political views, to advance a political cause, is the definition of terrorism. You realize that? These guys are terrorists. That's not hyperbole. It's not rhetoric. They legally meet the definition of terrorist. So this, despite what the leftists say, despite the how many people have been killed, including children, by guns and everything else. I've never killed anybody with a gun unlawfully. All the people that I know of. We cannot ever give up our arms, period. This right here is the reason why we must never give up our arms. And now at a time when they're calling for, you know, our nation to disarm ourselves, now more than ever, we should absolutely refuse to be disarmed. This is worth fighting for on every level, with the ballot box and on the soapbox, so we don't have to do it with the cartridge box. This is Radio Free Redoubt, segment 4 coming up. Don't go away.
Very specifically, we have to ask ourselves and answer a question, every individual. Are we a loyalist or are we a patriot? Are we God-fearing, freedom-loving, self-reliant Americans? Or are we government-dependent, constitution-ignoring socialists? That is the question we all have to answer. And I appreciate Radio Free Readout because they've been answering that question quite well to many people in this area for a long, long time.
Now, let's set the record straight. There's no argument over the choice between peace and war, but there's only one guaranteed way you can have peace, and you can have it in the next second. Surrender. Admittedly, there's a risk in any course we follow other than this, but every lesson of history tells us that the greater risk lies in appeasement, and this is the specter our well-meaning liberal friends refuse to face, that their policy of accommodation is appeasement, and it gives no choice between peace and war. Only between fight or surrender. If we continue to accommodate, continue to back and retreat, eventually we have to face the final demand, the ultimatum. And what then? When Nikita Khrushchev has told his people, he knows what our answer will be. He has told them that we're retreating under the pressure of the Cold War, and someday, when the time comes to deliver the final ultimatum, our surrender will be voluntary, because by that time, we will have been weakened from within spiritually, morally, and economically. He believes this because from our side, he's heard voices pleading for peace at any price, or better rev than death. Or as one commentator put it, he'd rather live on his knees than die on his feet. And therein lies the road to war, because those voices don't speak for the rest of us. You and I know and do not believe that life is so dear and peace so sweet as to be purchased at the price of chains and slavery. If nothing in life is worth dying for, when did this begin? Just in the face of this enemy? Or should Moses have told the children of Israel to live in slavery under the Pharaohs? Should Christ have refused the cross? Should the patriots at Concord Bridge have thrown down their guns and refused to fire the shot heard around the world? The martyrs of history were not fools. And our honored dead, who gave their lives to stop the advance of the Nazis, didn't die in vain. Where then is the road to peace? Well, it's a simple answer after all. You and I have the courage to say to our enemies, there is a price we will not pay. There is a point beyond which they must not advance. Winston Churchill said the destiny of man is not measured by material complications. When great forces are on the move in the world, we learn we're spirits, not animals. He said there's something going on in time and space and beyond time and space, which, whether we like it or not, spells duty. You and I have a rendezvous with destiny. We'll preserve for our children this, the last best hope of man on earth, or we'll sentence them to take the last step into 1,000 years of darkness.
We're back here with the fourth and final segment at Radio Free Redoubt, broadcasting from the free zones outside the wire to our brothers and sisters in occupied territory. Have faith. You're in our thoughts and prayers. You are not alone. This segment is brought to you by our friends at Works Holsters, Works LLC, WERKZ.com is the website to find out how you can get your hands on a custom-made holster or magazine carrier or both, made right here in the American Redoubt with a lifetime guarantee on all their products. And if you live in Liberty State, the future Liberty State, get a hold of them and find out how you can get your hands on a Liberty State flag or Liberty State seal emblazed holster. I love mine. It's really nice quality. Good stuff. Okay, In this segment, we want to talk finally about nationalism. This week, we saw in Drudge Report, just came out, world leaders with the power to make war but a duty to preserve peace solemnly marked the end of World War I's slaughter 100 years ago at a commemoration Sunday that drove home the message, never again, but also exposed the globe's new political fault lines, it says. So all these heads of state there, Donald Trump, Vladimir Putin, and all the others, they're there. And, of course, French President Emmanuel Macron used the occasion as its host to sound a powerful and sobering warning about the fragility of peace and the dangers of nationalism. The dangers of nationalism. I'd love to know the dangers of nationalism actually rationally explained. But he said the dangers of nationalism and of nations that put themselves first above the collective good. This is globalist, Marxist, communist speak. All right. Shame on you for putting your own nation first above the collective good. In other words, against globalism. He says the old demons are rising again, ready to complete their tasks of chaos and of death. Meanwhile, in the name of globalism and open borders and collectivism, he's got places in his country that no Frenchman can go because they're completely dominated by the Muslims that he helped embrace coming into his country that is completely Muslimifying France. It's not even recognizable in many places. And how many Frenchmen and women have been killed by these conquerors that they're embracing in the name of globalism? He says, check this logic out. This is the most twisted, faulty logic. He says, patriotism is the exact opposite of nationalism. Did you get this? This is the French president. Patriotism is the exact opposite of nationalism. Nationalism is a betrayal of patriotism, he said. In saying our interests first, whatever happens to the others, you erase the most precious thing a nation can have, that which makes it live, that which causes it to be great, and that which is the most important, its moral values, he says. But see, what made America exceptional and great are our moral values. And the communists know this, and they want to upend that. They want to uproot that. And it's our moral Christian moral values that makes America exceptional. Strictly, that's it. That's straight up. Even the communists recognize this. I don't have it in front of me. I'm going to pull it up and read it to you next week. What the communist Chinese even recognized. We analyzed America to find out what makes it truly so great and exceptional. And we've looked at your military might, your economic power, everything. But other countries have the same things. What you guys have is clearly, we have no doubt about it, it is your Christian faith, your Christian moral foundation. That is what sets America, the United States, apart from all the other countries in the world and what makes you great. The communists recognize this. Nationalism is evil. Well, let me read to you. So let's look at the definition of nationalism. So nationalism, this is from Merriam-Webster's, their modern version. Loyalty and devotion to a nation, especially a sense of national consciousness, exalting one nation above all others and placing primary emphasis on promotion of its culture and interests as opposed to those of other nations or supranational groups. Did you get that? Supranational groups like the UN. So if you're rejecting globalism, the European Union, the international community without borders, you are a nationalist, which is evil. Their second definition, a nationalist movement or government opposing nationalism. Okay, a nationalist movement or government. That's another definition for nationalism. But what's interesting is when you read their definition of how it might be used in a sentence. So here's what they use is nationalism in a sentence. The war was caused by nationalism and greed. That's Merriam-Webster's online dictionary for the definite for how to use nationalism in a sentence. This is subtle indoctrination. The war was caused by nationalism and greed. Isn't that something? So let's go on. Let's find another. This is the dictionary, the Cambridge Dictionary, English Dictionary on nationalism. Same type of indoctrination. Webster's ninth new. No, I'll get to that in a second. So what they say is a nation's wish and attempt to be politically independent, a great or too great love for your own country, or could be too great of a love for your own country. So this is how Cambridge English Dictionary recommends this could be used, or this is how they use nationalism in a sentence as an example, so you know what the word really means. Here's the context of it. The book documents the rise of the political right with its accompanying strands of nationalism and racism. That's Cambridge's English Dictionary defining nationalism and then showing you how it might be used in a sentence. And I'll read the sentence to you again. The book documents the rise of the political right with its accompanying strands of nationalism and racism. See, they just interwove nationalism with racism. Incredible. But I went to my own dictionary on my shelf. Here's my Webster's ninth New Collegiate Dictionary, printed in 1984. Copyright 1984. Get rid of this modern revisionist rewording and redefining words here. Let's go back to find out what it's been since 1844. If you look up nationalism, it's got a date next to it. In Webster's ninth New Collegiate Dictionary, the date next to it is 1844. And when they put a date next to a word in these older dictionaries, that's to indicate the date of the earliest recorded use in the English language. These people are not only rewriting history, they're redefining our own language. So let's go back. Since 1844, this is the definition of nationalism, all the way up through 1984 and probably beyond. It's a loyalty and devotion to a nation, especially a sense of national consciousness, exalting one nation above all others and placing primary emphasis on promotion of its culture and interests as opposed to those of other nations or supranational groups. I was just speaking to some folks who had dinner last night with some Czechoslovakian immigrants, and they were talking about the danger that America faces, and they were frustrated why Americans don't care to vote. They said, America, you must fight to preserve what makes America exceptional because there is nowhere else to go. How many times have we heard that from immigrants? People who love, you won't find a stronger patriot than someone who came, especially from a communist country, to come here to the United States only to see America handing their nation over, their birthright, their God-given blessed nation on a silver platter over to Marxism and globalism. Unbelievable. But see, Macron's views aren't new either. We've seen this type of thinking go all the way back to, here's one from 1838. One individual here says, this one individual is William Lloyd Garrison. On the Declaration of Sentiments, this is a speech that he gave in the Boston Peace Conference. See, this isn't new. In 1838, he says, our country is the world. Our countrymen are all mankind. We love the land of our nativity only as we love all other lands. The interests, rights, and liberties of American citizens are no more dear to us than are those of the whole human race. Hence, we can allow no appeal to patriotism to revenge any national insult or injury. This is from 1838. But I want to say, hey, nationalism to me, America is so exceptional and its principles are so worth fighting for. They must be guarded. There is nowhere else to go. And I want to end by quoting Daniel Webster. And this is what he said, one of the founding fathers. He said, hold on, my friends, to the Constitution and to the Republic for which it stands. Miracles do not cluster, and what has happened once in 6,000 years may not happen again. Hold on to the Constitution, because if the American Constitution should fail, there will be anarchy throughout the world. Truer words have never been spoken. Daniel Webster. That was a wise and insightful man, and those are words worth listening to and taking to heart. This is the voice of the American Redoubt. You have a blessed week. My name is John Jacob Schmidt, and if you're a God-fearing, liberty-loving patriot and a nationalist, my name is your name too. Good night.